I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a daily look at how North Carolina is dealing with COVID-19 and what we're learning about ourselves in the face of a global crisis. Today, the politics of reopening. This afternoon, Governor Roy Cooper gave his latest COVID-19 update.
The president has left the responsibility to me as governor to make decisions about how and when we ease restrictions. I accept that. But when governors are faced with global supply chain breakdowns when it comes to supplies and equipment, the federal government must help more. And they have some, and we appreciate it, but not enough.
Cooper, of course, is a Democrat. The State House and Senate are majority Republican. This is not news. It led last summer to a stalemate over the state budget. To this point in the pandemic response, political partisanship hasn't been a major issue. But that fight is likely to come, soon. A few dozen protesters made their feelings known this week, sitting in their cars outside the legislature and honking horns, as captured by the News and Observer. They, like many Republicans, have expressed a desire to open things up sooner than has been proposed. But another big fight ahead will be over money. The state has received about $2 billion in federal funds to deal with the pandemic. Another $2 billion is expected. So let's start there with Rose Hoban, editor of North Carolina Health News, and the role partisan politics may play in the weeks ahead.
Well, I think I've mentioned it before, but the House has been pretty transparent about what it's been doing. They've been holding meetings of different working groups looking at different aspects of the state's COVID response. So those working groups have covered healthcare, naturally, education, economic support, and continuity of state operations. Mm-hmm. The Senate, in contrast, hasn't had any public committee meetings. Senate Leader Phil Berger's folks have said there will be some recommendations coming out of the Senate leadership on what they'd like to propose when they come back to Raleigh later this month for a couple days, like from the 28th to the 30th. Senate Democrats held a phone call this morning to talk about some ad hoc working groups they've been holding remotely, and they have a list of recommendations out of each of their topic areas. And they said they plan to prioritize things they think could have bipartisan support. Of course, they mentioned Medicaid expansion, which is one of the Democrats' big priorities. But they also said it wouldn't be something they'd really be pushing for in this 3-day return to Raleigh, as they realize that's probably not going to get solved in this short time. So we're going to see more politics happening in the short run. And I have no idea. I think there's a desire to get stuff done at the legislature because the state is facing some significant challenges, but I have no idea how the politics are going to play out as that happens.
One effort pushed forward this week was a small antibody test championed by Senate Leader Phil Berger. Now that it's official, can you give us a sense of the scientific efficacy of that study and how it might be used politically?
I'm going to give you an overview of it. It's a decently designed study, basic study, right? The researchers are doing a number of things. Mm-hmm. One, they're doing ongoing syndromic surveillance of volunteers in the study, meaning they'll ask people to add their symptoms to a database that they're going to keep over time, and then they can match them with the electronic health records at the two hospital systems where they're recruiting patients from, so Wake Forest Baptist and Atrium. They're also sending them home testing kits so that, like, once a month, they'll put a drop of blood on this little plastic card to see if they've developed antibodies to the coronavirus. Now, I'm going to give you a quick science refresher. If you've been exposed to a virus, your body makes antibodies to that virus that help you fight off any subsequent infections, right? Mm-hmm. That's the basis of vaccines. So there's still a lot we don't know about antibody protection from COVID. In other words, does having antibodies against the virus protect you in the short, medium, or long terms? And I'm always telling people, we've only known about this disease for 4 months. We can't know about long-term protection yet, right? Anyway, this testing apparatus they're using to do the antibody testing, it's supposed to be like a home pregnancy test. You prick your finger, you put a drop of blood on a plastic slide, and a couple minutes later you get like a plus or minus, right? Well, these are still experimental. So part of the study is actually validating, I'm making quote marks in the air, this home test kit that's made by a California company called Scanwell. Mm-hmm. Finally, they'll do some other validation of the Scanwell home test kit by sending along a different set of kits. So you'll be able to take a finger prick of blood and send that sample in to be analyzed at a lab, and it'll compare against like the result you got with the Scanwell thing. So the study is supposed to last for more than a year, so we won't get information from it anytime soon. The main researcher, John Sanders, a doctor and researcher from Wake Forest Baptist, said the study will cost, when it's all said and done, in the tens of millions of dollars. He's looking for that kind of money from the National Institutes of Health and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So the $100,000 that the legislature put for it is really a drop in the bucket. Sanders called it a Kickstarter that allowed them to get off the ground. So the politicized aspect of this is twofold. One is that Senator Phil Berger, who leads the Senate, is backing this study and put $100,000 in legislative discretionary funds toward it. His office has, for about a month now, been talking about how randomized testing for antibodies is needed to give us a better idea of how widespread the disease is before we make big policy decisions, which is, you know, legit. They've bandied around the number 1,000, which I think a lot of folks would say is too low a number to really get an idea of what's happening in the state of 10 million, mm-hmm. aside from perhaps a snapshot in time. Mm-hmm. They've said that that number has been confirmed by a consultant from Stanford that they've used. I wrote to the guy and he was like, yeah, 1,000 would work, but I think 10,000 would be better. You know, so there's been a lot of back and forth about the numbers. The second politicized thing is that Berger took a swipe at HHS Secretary Mandy Cohen, saying that she'd been resistant to this type of testing. Now, she's been calling for testing for a long time, just not this type of testing and just not randomized testing, because, you know, we know that testing materials of all kinds have been in short supply, and that's been her big concern, right? She and Governor Cooper pushed back against this just a little bit later in the day at their press conference, essentially welcoming this study mm-hmm. as part of the broad range of studies that are being done by her department. She also said she hadn't heard anything about it until it was announced this week, and that her scientists have already reached out to the folks at Wake Forest. So, yeah, political tinges there, too.
Speaking of political tensions, you mentioned the full General Assembly coming back into a short session. That's going to happen a week from Tuesday. This is not a Zoom session. This is an actual session. So what will that look like?
I think it's going to be weird. You know, well, access to the general public to the legislative building is going to be severely curtailed. Reporters with credentials will be allowed in. So like Jeff DeBerry and I will be allowed in, and other members of the Capitol Press Corps, but not a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. We'll all have our temperatures taken as we come into the building, and we're all being asked to social distance once we're in the building. And, you know, Dave, I mean, that people crowd those meeting rooms and hallways, and they hang out in groups of chairs to chat and swap information. So I'm not really sure how or if that's going to be the case, like how that's going to go down. And Speaker Moore, at least, has talked about the idea of votes instead of taking 15 seconds, right? They open the machine, people have to vote, and then they close the machine and they seal the vote. Mm-hmm. He's talking about having votes being open for like a half hour or an hour so that legislators don't have to all sit on the floor at once. They can come on and off the floor for the purposes of voting. Hmm. I mean, for me, I plan on wearing a mask, not because it'll necessarily protect me, because I don't have an N95 mask, but because if I do end up carrying COVID, it might keep me from passing it along to somebody else. And frankly, I just also plan on being there because it's all going to be so weird. I think that's going to be a story in itself.
Rose Hoban is the editor of North Carolina Health News. Hang tight, more in a moment.
Hey, I'm Liz Schlemmer, and I work with Dave at WUNC North Carolina Public Radio, which produces this podcast. And this is a good time to say thanks to everyone who supports WUNC. Whether you're an individual donor or a business, we can't say thank you enough for providing us with the resources and opportunity to serve the state of North Carolina with up-to-the-minute news and information. everyone at WUNC is working around the clock to do just that, at this unique and perilous moment in our history. And we couldn't manage without your help. So thanks, and if you are able, please go to WUNC.org if you want to donate for the first time or to maybe increase your support.
Last year, a record 917,000 people visited the North Carolina Zoo in Asheboro. That record won't be broken this year. It's been a month since anyone was allowed in. But the animals, both human and otherwise, are still there, practicing good social distancing.
I want to take this mask off. Now, we're wearing these normally during the day.
And they're trying to make up for at least some of those lost visitors online. The zoo is posting virtual visits during the pandemic. At least three times a week, zookeepers go live on Facebook to introduce viewers to the wildlife, like the cougars, Olive and Heath.
This looks like Olive. She's the female. Olive and Heath, by the way, are brother and sister. They're about 6 years old.
It's feeding time, and Olive's breakfast is near the top of the exhibit.
Olive here weighs in at around 110 pounds. Uh-oh, she spotted it. She weighs about 110 pounds. Watch this. Watch this. Amazing leapers. Ready? Whoa, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? These guys can jump up straight up in the air over up to 18 feet. Whoa.
The zoo says it wants to offer an educational experience for kids who are learning from home for at least another month.
The cougar is an apex predator. Their diet in the wild is really varied. They'll take anything from a small mouse all the way up to an elk or deer. Deer is a primary prey item.
For sure, a virtual visit is not the same as the real thing. But some things don't change, like the excitement in a zookeeper's voice when he knows he has a captive audience.
Oh, that's Heath. They did say he was not quite as adventurous on his leaps. He does like to play in the pool, though. And I don't know how you see this all the time, but they say he actually blows bubbles in the water, Heath.
That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Dave DeWitt. Will Michaels produces the podcast. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. Thanks for listening. See you Monday.